Afternoon, everyone. The Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Garrison.
Here.
Vice Chair Jacques.
Here.
Ranking Member Woodson.
Here.
Representatives Abbott.
Here.
Amnesty. Anton. Bartleman.
Here.
Black.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Mello.
Here.
Salzman.
Here.
Skidmore. Steele.
Here.
Tribolsi.
Here.
Or Mr. President.
Thank you, Emma. Members, we've got six member bills on the agenda today. As you all likely know, this is in all probability our last meeting. You never know. Things, crazier things have happened, but in all likelihood, this will be our last chance together. And on our last meeting, we try to recognize them every committee meeting, but this particular, since it's our last one, I give a special thank you to our sergeant staff, all these guys for what they do and gals, what they do for us. We appreciate you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for serving us. We're very grateful. Let's see. First bill up today of our six bills is going to be, I think I saw Representative McFarland over there. Representative McFarland, House Bill 1061, Community-Based Child Welfare Agencies. Representative McFarland, welcome to Healthcare Appropriations. You are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, everyone.
It's afternoon.
Good afternoon,
yes.
Everyone. So this is a bill concerning CBCs, which are the private entities that perform our child welfare services. I know that this committee has spent some time in this policy area. I'll just quickly scope you on what we're talking about. This is a privatized system of child welfare services. We have 17 of these providers around the state. They care for about 35,000 children, and the budget is just about $1 billion. This bill is a long time coming, and it has two main parts of it. One is accountability, and the other is funding. In this committee today, I'd like to spend the bulk of the time on the funding portion, but I'll tell you the whole bill. On the accountability side, it will require that DCF contracts with these CBCs is rebid every 5 years. It caps executive compensation. It creates conflict of interest disclosures as well as civil penalties for any violations. It caps these CBCs from providing more than 35% of services unless they have a waiver from their home-based community alliance, saying that there's no other providers in that area that could provide that service. And it also strengthens some CBC auditing processes. Now, on the funding side, we've got an amendment, which, with the chair's permission, I'd like to keep the questions to that amendment because it changes the course of the funding formula very drastically. But I'll set the scene for you, which is, in current law, we have something called an equity allocation model. And if you read through that portion of statute, it reads like an algebra formula with weights of how much different factors of caseloads should be considered. And I can see it filling into an Excel spreadsheet that would shoot out a number at the end. We haven't used that formula in statute since 2019. Since then, we've been asking DCF and the CBCs to come up with a new statute and a new funding formula. Well, it's 2024, and that hasn't happened yet, though they have been trying. And so this bill will say that the next year, do or die. Sorry, the amendment will say that. The bill tries to do it this year, but the amendment says next year. We have a contract with an actuarial company that will help us perform this math and this study. Both the bill and then the amendment goes into a lot of details because, as I know is important to you all as a committee, I believe we need to have legislative oversight into how the money is being spent. We are, after all, the appropriators of taxpayer dollars. So that, ineloquently, is the bill.
Thank you, Representative McFarland. Members, we have questions for Representative McFarland on the bill. Understanding, as she just stated, there is going to be an amendment that deals with the funding formula. Since this is an appropriations committee, I would hope that would be the rest of our questions, but do we have questions on the underlying bill before we get to the amendment? Any questions on the underlying bill, Representative Tribolsi? Yes, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair Garrison. Thank you, Representative. I just have a quick question, and it's not necessarily on the substance, but I've had a lot of stakeholders today just slide into my office asking a ton of questions, throwing a lot of things around. You have one more stop to go before this bill would go to the floor. Are you open to having some really good conversations so we can kind of weed through that?
You recognize, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I knew I could leave it to you to carry the voice of your local entities up here. Yes, admittedly, the accountability section of the bill is not ready for prime time. We do have one more committee, as you mentioned. The CBCs and I have been working very closely together along with the department on how we can tinker the accountability portion. So that's sort of like act three, I suppose, of this bill as it moves forward. But yes, I fully intend to continue to amend the accountability portion of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Trabalsi. Any other questions for Representative McFarland on the underlying bill before we take up the amendment, which will deal primarily with the fiscal impact? Any questions on the underlying bill? Seeing no questions, we have no public testimony on, we're going to fast forward. Representative McFarland, you've already touched on, but you're recognized to explain amendment barcode 365169.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the original bill had a three-tiered funding model that was the product of that actuarial firm that we consulted with. The CBCs gave us feedback that it was too much change too quickly, and because we care so much about the level of service to children who are in the system, I thought it prudent that we take a little pause on this. So this is what the amendment will do. It will put aside that three-tiered model, and it's going to say that between now and December 1st of 2024, before we come back for next session, DCF, the CBCs, and the services providers that the CBCs subcontract with need to get together, and they need to give us a funding formula. Many, many provisions in this amendment will detail the things that are important for us to see. It needs to be based on actual spend data. It needs to account for cost of living considerations in various areas of the state. It needs to prioritize preservation, well-being, and safety. A laundry list of what we need to see in this formula. And between now and December, we're going to have monthly check-ins with this working group, with the legislature, to let us know how they're doing. And I hope to see you again next session with a bill that will codify in statute what that funding formula looks like. As we project forward, right, we get that study which will enact our funding for the 2025 to 2026 fiscal year. We will use the formula, but we will control for any disruptions to the system. So say that funding formula would spit out perhaps for Rep. Trabalsi's CBC a lower funding level than where they currently are. We will adjust that to make sure that there are no disruptions in service for the children that are within the system. But we will go forward in the 2025 to 26 fiscal year with using the new funding formula appropriated through the General Appropriations Act. And that is the amendment.
Representative McFarland having explained her amendment, do we have questions on the amendment? I see Rep. Antone, then we're going to go to Rep. Steele. So Rep. Antone, you're first up.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your hard work. Just a question. Will this bill or the amendment have any impact on the residential group homes?
You're recognized, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in short, yes, Representative Antone, it will. Because it dictates the funding level for those group homes. Now, the providing of services is what's the most important. So no matter what this formula spits out at the end, for the first year of implementation of this future formula, we will ensure that there are no disruptions to service, right? So perhaps the CBC will have to, you know, cut some costs on like an IT contract or something, but the part of their spend, and in the front of the amendment, you'll see that we've delineated with some definitions core services funding versus administrative or fixed cost or sort of overhead spend. But our intention is that the dollars that are going to care for children, whether they be in group homes or family counseling or wherever in the system that they fall, that child in that case is accounted for based on, for lack of a more elegant way to say it, for their cost to the state.
Thank you, Rep. Steele. You're up next, followed by the ranking member.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for bringing the bill forward. Do you know how many children we actually help with this $1 billion?
You recognize, Rep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And obviously the numbers vary from season to season, from year to year, but about 35,000 children.
You follow up, Representative? Okay. Ranking member?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. McFarland, thank you again for listening. As we can see, you listened from the last committee to come up with this amendment. And I know the funding formula has been the major issue because the accountability piece we all agree with. What would be the makeup of the working group? Because I want to make sure that everyone is represented during that group since they have to come up with such an important issue, which is the funding formula. So what would a working group look like?
Representative, you recognize?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in the bill, we've left it by saying the department shall develop, this is line 31 of the amendment, department shall develop in collaboration with lead agencies and provider of child welfare services. But what I envisioning happening is our 17 CBCs are not going to want to miss that meeting. They will all be there in conjunction with DCF and then the child services providers, which is, again, you know, those subcontractors that the CBCs partner with to provide the services, so case management providers or after-school care providers or, you know, the various constellation of care. I expect them to all want to be at the table. If any of you have dealt with funding formulas elsewhere in statute, you know there is no shortage of people who have the answer of how the money should be spent. So I have no doubt that that working group will be well attended.
Okay, I'm gonna go to, I think Rep. Steele had a follow-up, and then I'll go back to you, ranking members. Rep. Steele, you're recognized.
Question. Thank you. Chair, thank you for taking my question. Are we going to, in the equation when you do get this revised, are you going to have a cap on the top line, meaning the CEO, the managing partners, whoever it is that's in the organization?
You recognize, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, Rep. Steele, in the accountability portion of the bill, I mentioned very briefly we'll cap executive compensation, some other accountability measures on that side of the house. I will remind you, though, it's a privatized system of care. So these are private entities. They only exist but for the government contract, but they are private entities that provide the service at a local level, which I can expound on in great detail if you have questions.
I'm sure everyone's excited to hear that dissertation, Representative McFarland, but I think we're going to go back to the ranking member with a follow-up, followed by Representative Anton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you again for your response. Representative McFarland, dealing with funding formula in my previous life, knowing how important it is to have all the voices at the table, would you consider having some of the recipients of the services as well to be involved, even if it's just a few of them, because they have something to contribute to that process as well? Would that be a consideration?
You're recognized, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's a great idea, but let me tell you this. As I worked in this field tried to run this bill a couple years ago without success, the number of people who work in the child welfare system now who were part of the system is really inspiring, actually. The number of CBC directors or services providers who had personal experience with the system in one way or another, who are now giving back through continued service into the system that they were a product of, it gives me great confidence that that experience and that voice will be represented. I would suggest that I don't really think it's appropriate these are children that we're talking about, they're under the age of 18. I wouldn't say it's entirely appropriate for a teenager to be on a working group dealing with the funding formula, but I do have confidence that their voice and their story and their needs will be represented both through the services providers and for the people themselves who have been a product of the system.
Rep. Anton, I think you had a follow-up, then we'll go to Representative Bardeman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, thank you for your hard work, and I hate that I didn't get to you before this. So there's one CBC somewhere in Central Florida that felt like it had a great percentage of the children, but underfunded. So will this change ensure that they are properly funded on an equity or parity basis?
You recognize, Representative. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, had a CBC. My own CBC was underfunded, which is why I happened upon this issue to begin with. I will tell you that I think it's probably impossible that all the CBCs walk away from this and say we have enough money. Has anyone ever told you in this process that they have enough money? I mentioned at the top that this whole system costs about $1 billion. It's like $887 million or something, but round to a billion. We're not, we've taken care in the amendment to say that what the formula needs to come back with is not telling us that we need a bigger pie. It's telling us how the existing pie should be allocated, right? So I have no doubt that they would like to come back and tell us they need $2 billion to operate the system. Again, our role as legislators and appropriators is to appropriate the total amount and to divide it across the state for the various services that it's tied to. But back to your original question, will the Central Florida CBC feel happy? No idea. I certainly hope so. I hope that my own CBC feels that they are fairly and appropriately funded. The equity allocation model that exists in statute and this funding that we've been doing in proviso in the back of the bill since 2019 is the current state, and I find that unacceptable. Because for the very reason that the Central Florida CBC that you're mentioning and my CBC continue to feel that they are underfunded. Other CBCs in other areas of the states also feel that they are underfunded. At least if we have a formula that we're all looking at, we can adjust the lever and say, you know, we're not providing enough for group homes, or we are not providing enough compensation for case management services, or I need more for my building. You know, whatever the lever is, we can tinker with the lever instead of stuffing random dollars in the back of the bill in a way that's not transparent.
All right, Representative Bartleman had a question on the amendment. Again, on the amendment.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. My question is, because the amendment is filled with cost of living adjustments, and when you say regionally, how are you dividing those regions? Because specifically where I live, the cost of living is outrageous, one of the worst in the country, so to get any kind of housing or anything. So how is that going to look when you say regionally? And is it going to be divided based on the lead agency map? Or I just want to make sure that that's included, because it costs more to live in some portions of the state. Thank you.
You're recognized, Representative McCall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Bartleman, I really appreciate it, because the reason why we've put the words cost of living in here is because I know it was so important to see those words for a couple of our CBCs that are in higher cost of living areas. So I was in the Navy before I ran for office. We had our housing allowance was based on zip code. That would be one way they could solve it. We're not going to tell them how to take the hill. We're just going to tell them to take the hill, make an adjustment for the financial makeup of the different areas of our state, account for that somehow in the formula, so that children that live in a more expensive area are not being punished with less funding than other areas of the state.
Any other questions for Representative McFarland on the amendment? Any other questions on the amendment? Seeing no further questions on the amendment, do we have public testimony on the amendment? I believe we do. Sam Kearse from DCF, the LAD, waves in support. Thank you, Secretary Harris and your team. We appreciate that. All right, any debate on the amendment, members? Any debate on Representative McFarland's amendment? Seeing no debate, Representative McFarland, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
I'll waive closing the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative McFarland, having closed on amendment, all in favor of amendment signify by saying aye. Aye. Any opposed, nay. Show the amendment adopted. All right, we're now back on the bill as amended. We've already had questions, public testimony again. Sam Kearse with the Department of DCF, thank you very much, waving in support. We appreciate your hard work on this with Representative McFarland. That's all the public testimony we have on the bill. Members, we have debate on this bill. Rep. Antone, we're going to start with you. Anyone else?
We'll start, right. Rep. Antone. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your hard work on this, and thank you for trying to get this right. Appreciate you.
All right, ranking member, you're recognized.
Rep. McFarland, thank you so much for your willingness to work with us and the providers as well to make this bill what it needs to be. You have really listened, and you have done your very best to bring it up to par. And what I was referring to on the last question that I had asked was the adopted parents, the foster care parents, not per se the children. I know that was like maybe a little misunderstanding, but that's who I was referring to, because I would like for them to be part of the process as well, because they have something to contribute. But I sincerely appreciate your hard work on this bill. I know this is something that is very important to you, and you have proven that you are willing to listen and do what needs to be done for the benefit of the children and also the family. So thank you so much.
Any other debate on the bill, members? I'll just want to say very briefly, Representative McFarland, thank you for your work on this very complicated bill. I know you've taken countless meetings, as have many members of this committee. Community-based care is very important. Many members of the legislature are very involved in local CBCs. I know Representative Salzman is a board member of hers, CBC in the Panhandle, a very important issue for her, and as it is for many of us. So because it's so important and because we're talking about some of our most vulnerable Floridians, it's important we get it right, and I want to thank you and commend you for your hard work on this bill. So with that, Representative McFarland, do you recognize to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, as I close on the bill and ask for your support, it ain't over yet. We got a lot of work left to do on this bill. I ask for your trust in me as I continue to navigate it. This is such a strange area of policy because even though child welfare seems like a system that only touches a certain amount of people, we know that's not true. I have heard from more members on this bill advocating for their local community than I have on any other bill I've ever run or experienced in the House. And I think it's a testament to you all as members of how close you are to your local communities for advocating for them. I hope that we can get this bill into a place that is at least moderately acceptable to all the groups. I can guarantee you that not everyone's going to be happy. It's just the way that a funding formula is going to go, unfortunately. But I think that we've made great progress with the help of many members and your CBCs back home, as well as your providers and the great work of the department. And I look forward to presenting a bill that's in a great position when I see you on the floor.
Representative McFarland, having closed on her bill, Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Garrison.
Yes.
Vice Chair Jogg.
Yes.
Ranking Member Woodson.
Yes.
Representatives Abbott.
Yes.
Amnesty.
Yes.
Antone.
Yes.
Bartleman.
Yes.
Black.
Yes.
Campbell.
Yes.
Kennedy.
Yes.
Mello.
Yes.
Salzman.
No.
Skidmore.
Yes.
Yes.
Steele.
Sorry about that. Yes.
Trabolsi.
Yes.
14 yes.
All right, that bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative, and keep up the great work. All right, next up is going to be HB 547, Representative Altman, Dentistry. Very simple title, Dentistry. Leaves much to the imagination.
You can really sink your teeth into this
bill. That's right, there you go. Representative Altman, you are recognized to present HB 547.
House Bill 547. Is a product of the Florida Dental Association and the Florida Board of Dentistry to clean up the Dental Practices Act after many years of changes to the dental license exam and dental licensure process. It updates Florida statutes to reflect the current dental license exam accepted by Florida and 47 other states called the American Board of Dental Examiners Exam, as administered by the Commission on Dental Competency and Assessment. Some of the changes, very simple. It allows dental students to take different sections of American Dental, of the American Board of Dental Examiners exam throughout the dental school year, not just the final year. Removes requirements that places different standards on dental students who took the exam in-state versus those who took exam out-of-state. Adds language for the Board of Dentistry to contemplate personal emergencies and special hardships when out-of-state applications apply for dental licensures. And that is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Altman. Members, do we have questions on the bill? Any questions, members? Any questions of Representative Altman? Seeing no questions, we're going to move on to public testimony. Alexander Abu with the Florida Dental Association waves in support. Thank you very much, Alexander. Appreciate good seeing you. And that's all the public testimony we have on the bill. Members, any debate on this great bill by Representative Altman? Any debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Altman, you're welcome, recognized to close.
Wave close, Mr. Chair.
Representative Altman, we're having wave close on HB 547. Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Garrison.
Yes.
Vice Chair Jaw.
Yes.
Ranking Member Woodson.
Yes.
Representatives Abbott.
Yes.
Amnesty.
Yes.
Antone.
Yes.
Bartleman.
Yes.
Black.
Yes.
Campbell.
Yes.
Kennedy.
Yes.
Mello.
Yes.
Salzman.
Yes.
Skidmore.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Trabolsi.
Yes.
15 yes.
Thank you, Emma. Show that bill reported favorably.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Representative. All right, next up is going to be Representative Burfield, HB 783, Medicaid Managed Care Plan Performance Metrics. Good afternoon, Representative, and you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and Committee Members. Florida's Medicaid Managed Care journey began over 20 years ago with two pilot programs. Over 10 years ago, Florida extended the program statewide. And at the time, Florida's managed care program was a national leader, Many other states have since joined into the managed care approach to implementing the principles of our very program. However, those states had the advantage of learning from Florida, enabling them to improve upon some of the aspects, especially around data collection, analysis, reporting, and accountability. They have used their data to better understand the care being delivered and the cost drivers, which have enabled the policymakers like you and I to make continued policy and financial improvements to their program. Currently, the Florida's reporting shows plan performance on HEDIS data, which is a set of outcome measures developed by the National Committee on Quality Assurance. Florida meets additional reporting requirements by CMS. However, the state has not reviewed and updated its data to best practices as other states have. Much of which is required in reporting in this bill is information already being collected by ACA today. It's not in a format, though, that is easily digestible for policymakers such as you and I. By requiring a third-party vendor to analyze and generate a public-facing dashboard and an annual report will assist us in making decisions that are related to the program. Having data provides us transparency in the Medicaid program that will allow us as policymakers to see pain points within the program and enact policy changes that are necessary. For example, if you consider the Live Healthy piece of legislation that we are taking into consideration currently, we are making strides to improve access and to reduce costs through promoting appropriate care settings. With a mechanism such as this, we will be able to see the data and determine whether or not the policies that we have put into place are actually achieving what we hope to. I believe ACA has recognized the need to analyze these metrics as evidenced in their recently released and awarded ITN for the Developmentally Disabled Medicaid Managed Care Pilot Program that we just passed last session. In short, this new standard of analysis we established through this piece of legislation will produce the data necessary for us to, for us to evaluate the performance of the policy and to determine whether the decisions that we are making as fiduciaries responsible for the taxpayer dollars and this program are meeting the needs of our constituents. Mr. Chairman, that's an overview of the piece of legislation.
Thank you, Representative Burfield. And Representative Burfield, having explained her bill, members, do we have questions on this bill? Members, any questions? Any questions going once, going twice, sold? We're going to move on to public testimony. First up is David Micah with the Florida Hospital Association, a proponent of the bill. Mr. Micah, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, David Micah, on behalf of the Florida Hospital Association, represent more than 200 hospitals and health systems across the state. Really want to thank Representative Burfield. Look, this committee, I think, has been very intentional over this session and through committee weeks under the leadership of the chair to really look at how we're using our resources. We think this bill is a natural progression of that and allows more information to come forward. Our partners in managed care are part of this process and will allow us to work with them, see this kind of information, and work with the legislature as we make decisions about how this moves forward. Want to thank, again, Representative Burfield. We know it's a tough bill. And her work on this as well, and ask for your favorable support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Micah. I appreciate you being here. Karen Murillo with AARP waves in support. Karen, thank you. Good to see you. Next up is Margaret Hooper with the Florida Developmental Disabilities Council waving in support. Margaret, somewhere back there, thank you for being here and waving. And last, we have Jared Fowler with the Florida Medical Association waving in support. Jared, thank you very much. Glad you're here. All right, members, that's all we have in terms of public testimony. Do we have debate on Representative Burfield's bill? Any debate? Yes, Representative Barlwin, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to speak in support of this bill. I get a lot of phone calls to my office about prior authorizations, and then those prior authorizations are subsequently denied after a service is provided. Just denials, having to, everything that you've outlined that's on page 8 of the analysis that everyone complains about, now I will be able to see after this is implemented what's really going on. Is there really a problem? Is there really a problem with one provider as opposed to just people calling and you just hear one-offs? And is there a systemic problem? And so I think this is really important information to have as decision makers, and it'll help in the future help us construct great policy for the state of Florida. So thank you for bringing forward this bill.
Thank you, Representative Barham. Any other debate, members? Any other debate? Yes, Rep. Skidmore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having been originally, long ago, opposed to moving Medicaid into managed care, and then subsequently working for an managed care entity, I know for a fact that this is an important piece of legislation, and it may have been a heavy lift, but it is extraordinarily important when you think about the fact that nearly one-sixth of the entire budget of the state of Florida is paid to our managed care companies to take care of our most vulnerable population. So I appreciate everything that this must have taken to get here. Very supportive of anything that provides us some transparency and accountability to our taxpayers who are footing the bill, and appreciate all the hard work that must have gone into it.
Thank you, Rep. Skidmore. Any of the members in debate? Any of the members in debate? Seeing none. Representative, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just ask you to join me. I think, as has been mentioned, this is a significant amount of our budget. And I think that we do have a fiduciary responsibility, not just from a financial standpoint, but also from a policy standpoint. And I think this data is going to be critical in us taking the next steps that we need to be taking as a state. Thank you.
Representative Burfield having closed on her bill. Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Garrison?
Yes.
Vice Chair Jogg?
Yes.
Ranking Member Woodson?
Yes.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Amnesty?
Yes.
Antone?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Trivulzi?
Yes.
Thank you, Emma. Show the bill reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Burfield. Next up is HB 499 by our own Representative Mello. I'm not even going to try to pronounce this. Congenital cytomegalovirus screening. It's as good as I can get for
if Thank you, Chair Garrison.
So you're recognized.
Thank you. That was pretty good.
Thank you.
Cytomegalovirus. Thank you. Thank you, members, for hearing HB 499. Cytomegalovirus, CMV, is a virus that very few people know about. Over half of adults are infected with CMV by age 40, and approximately one of every 200 babies are born with congenital CMV, also CCMV. In the congenital form of the virus, it passes from mother to fetus and can result in devastating outcomes. About one in five babies with CCMV have long-term health problems, which include hearing loss. 80% of these babies with CCMV are asymptomatic and cannot be detected without a CMV screening. Therefore, it is critical to identify congenital CMV in the high-risk infant population. A delay in identification could mean the difference between a child receiving proper care or developing serious health problems. Currently, only children who fail a newborn hearing screening qualify for CMV screening. This bill would expand CMV screenings to include NICU babies and a few others meeting certain criteria if screening can be accomplished before 21 days of age. And that is the bill, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mello. Members, do we have any questions of Representative Mello about the substance of the bill? Any questions for Representative Mello? Seeing no questions, we do have some public testimony. First up is Tim Colvin, wishing to appear as a proponent of the bill. Ms. Colvin, thank you for coming from Baker County. It's good seeing you, and you are recognized, sir.
On problems like hearing and vision and diagnose them quickly. And that quick diagnosis will make a lifetime of differences for the child. And we just ask for your support, and we thank you for the time.
Thank you, Ms. Colvin. Appreciate you being here. Next up, we have Doug Bell with the, on behalf of the American Academy of Pediatrics, Florida chapter, waiving in support. Doug, I think I saw you back there. Thank you for being here. Matthew Holliday from NCH, waiving in support. Mr. Holliday, thank you. Good to see you. Cora Merritt from Nemours Children's Health, here waiving in support as proponent. Good to see you. Thank you to everyone at Nemours. Ian David with Saratoga Speech and Hearing Foundation, waiving in support. Mr. David, thank you for being here. We appreciate you. Deborah Galinsky with the also with Saratoga Speech and Hearing Foundation, waiving in support as a proponent. Thank you for being here. Ms. Teresa Bolger here is a waiving in support. As always, Teresa, it's great to see you. Thank you. Vanessa Colvin also here along with her husband, waiving in support coming from McLean. Thank you for driving from Baker County today. We appreciate it. Members, that's all we have in terms of public testimony today. Do we have any debate on Representative Mello's bill? Any debate, members? All right, seeing no debate, Representative Mello, you are recognized to close on your good bill.
I waive close, Chair.
Representative Mello having closed, Emma, please call the roll on HB 499.
Chair Garrison?
Yes.
Vice Chair Jacques?
Yes.
Ranking Member Woodson?
Yes.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Amnesty?
Yes.
Antone?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Trabolsi?
Yes.
15 yes, 0 yes.
Thank you, Emma. Show that bill reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Mello, and thank you for everyone who made the trip up here today. Next up is HB 563 by Representative Campbell. I think it's the first time Representative Campbell has had a bill in front of this committee in the 2 years he's been a member. Persons with lived experience, Representative Campbell, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Permission to approach the podium?
Sure, whatever you prefer.
Good afternoon, members. Good afternoon, Chair Garrison, Vice Chair Jock, Ranking Member Woodson, and members of this committee. I'm here to present HB 563, Persons with a Lived Experience. This bill provides individuals who were homeless at one point in their life a job opportunity to assist individuals who are currently homeless. Currently, the current Florida law prohibits individuals with minor nonviolent offenses from being employed by state contracted Florida homeless continuum of care lead agencies and homeless service providers. DCF requires level two background screenings for contracts with continuum of care lead agencies. HB 563 would continue to require level two background screenings, but would clarify the process for an exemption for finding for persons with lived homeless experience who have a nonviolent criminal record and has not during the previous 3 years been arrested. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Campbell. Members, we have questions of Representative Campbell on HB 563. Any questions, members? Any questions? Any questions? Seeing no questions, we're going to move on to public testimony. Barney Bishop with the Florida Smart Justice Alliance is here waving in support. Mr. Bishop, thank you. Stephanie Sutton with the Florida Supportive Housing Coalition is waving in support. Thank you very much. Brian Cherry with the Florida Coalition to End Homelessness is a proponent of the bill. And waving in support or testifying? Waving in support. Thank you. Appreciate you being here, Brian. Thank you. That's all the public testimony we have. Members, do we have any debate on Representative Campbell's bill? Any debate on Representative Campbell's bill? Seeing no debate. Oh, we do have debate. Ranking member, absolutely. You're recognized for debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Campbell. I know how much you wanted to bring this bill to this committee today, and I truly appreciate your love for this population, the work that you are trying to do to ensure that they have a roof over their head. I know this is just the beginning, but I really appreciate what you have done, how much you truly care about the homeless population, and I look forward to support you on this great piece of legislation. And I would encourage all my colleagues to do the same and support you. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Any other debate on the bill? Seeing no additional debate, Representative Campbell, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You got to excuse my excitement. This is the first time that I get to present a bill on a committee that I actually sit on. So I've been extra excited and jittery all day. So in closing, this bill is not going to solve the homeless problem. But what it does is a step in the right direction. Homelessness is not just the individual that we see panhandling on the side of the road. It's also the single mother with living in our car with three kids in a Walmart parking lot. It's also the three families that are living in one household. And so this will allow for utilizing persons with lived experience to support as best practice by many entities, including the U.S. Department of Housing and the Urban Development. The entity of Homeless Continuum of Care lead agencies draw down $100 million annually from the state of Florida. HUD recently added scoring language to their notice of funding opportunity. So with that being said, this is a very important bill that we are seeing push forward. I'm excited to see this thing move forward. And with that, members, I'm asking for your favorable support.
Representative Campbell, having closed on his bill, Emma, please call the roll on HB 563.
Chair Garrison?
Yes.
Vice Chair Jogg?
Yes.
Ranking Member Woodson?
Yes.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Amnesty?
Yes.
Antone?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Trivulzi?
Yes.
15 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you, Emma. Show that bill reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Campbell. We appreciate you. From one former red shirt to a current red shirt, we're going to end up our day with Representative Chamberlain on House Bill 1313. Now, Representative, I know you're not officially a freshman until next year, so if you need any help today, Representative Campbell's here. If you get in trouble, just look at him. I'm sure he'll walk you through it. So welcome to Health Care Appropriations, and you're recognized to present your bill.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Chair Garrison, Vice Chair Jock, Ranking Member Woodson, and committee members. Thank you all for agreeing to hear my bill, HB 1313, Clinical Laboratory Personnel. The laboratory industry in Florida is experiencing a critical shortage, about 20% of personnel qualified under Florida's licensure requirements to serve as laboratory technicians. Currently, Florida licensing requirements for these positions does not allow for individuals with a four-year bachelor's degree in relevant sciences such as chemical, biological, or physical to be trained to perform moderate complexity or high complexity testing without passing a state examination or national certification. This can add significant delays to hiring and is not required by 41 other states. The goal with this legislation is to help relieve the current laboratory workforce shortage in Florida by amending state licensure requirements for clinical laboratory personnel and conforming them to the Federal Clinical Laboratory Improvement Amendments, CLIA, standards that most use. As of now, Florida has been looking to other states and other countries for these personnel. This legislation will give more career paths to our students as they enter into the workforce and allows those with approved bachelor's degrees to begin their careers with on-the-job training. The bill would authorize an individual who meets the requirements contained in the Code for Federal Regulation, Title 42, Section 493.1423 or 493.1489 of the CLIA to have the ability to perform moderate complexity testing or high complexity testing, respectively. This would qualify them for the licensure to perform such testing in Florida without the state's current additional requirements. That is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Chamberlain. Do we have any questions of Representative Chamberlain? Any of the freshmen would like to question their fellow redshirt freshmen? Now might be your opportunity. Representative Steele takes the challenge. Representative Steele, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for bringing this kind of a bill. I see that you've removed more law than you've added. Was that your point in the bill?
Representative Chamberlain, you're recognized to respond to Representative Steele's question.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, it was.
All right, any other questions for Representative Chamberlain? Any other questions? The red shirt's getting off easy. I'm kind of disappointed in the committee, so we'll have to make up for it at a later date. Representative Abbott, you're not going to take the bait? No? Okay. Seeing no further questions, we're going to move to public testimony. Representative Chamberlain, you got off easy today, my friend, so congratulations to you. Jessica Love with the Laboratory Corporation of America waves in support. Thank you for being here. And Doug Russell with Quest Diagnostic Labs also waving in support. Mr. Russell, thank you for being here. All right, members, that's all the public testimony. And since y'all chickened out on questions, we are going to go to debate on Representative Chamberlain's bill. Any debate, members? I see Representative Abbott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Chamberlain, for bringing a great bill forward. As somebody who had been hazed quite well in a snake bill last year, I really appreciate this really good bill and the seriousness of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Abbott. Any other anyone else in debate? Seeing any other debate? All right, Representative Chamberlain, you are recognized to close on your good bill.
Thank you, Chair. I'll wave close.
That's a good man. He's learning quickly. Representative Chamberlain, having waved close, Emma, please call the roll on HB 1313.
Chair Garrison?
Yes.
Vice Chair Jacques?
Yes.
Ranking Member Woodson?
Yes.
Representatives Abbott?
Yes.
Amnesty?
Yes.
Antone?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Black?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Trabolsi?
Yes.
Thank you, Emma. Show that bill reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Chamberlain. Good having you here today. Members, before we close our subcommittee agenda today, that is all our bills, I want to take just a moment of personal privilege and just say thank you to each and every one of you for your service on this committee. For many of you, it's been a two-year stint. I love this committee. I love the culture we have on this committee. I look forward to watching its good work continue in the years ahead. I said last year at this time, this is the best subcommittee, I believe, in the Florida House. We do really good work here. I love the spirit of collegiality. We have passionate debates, but it never gets personal. And we do good work here. And so I really appreciate it. I appreciate you all. As we get into the budget process, my ask of each of you is stay engaged, not just on your member projects. Well, certainly those are important. But on the issues that we've talked about throughout our 2 years in the healthcare probes world. My door is open to every member, but especially members of this committee. So if there are issues as we get to conference that you're particularly concerned about or nervous about or just need somebody to vent to, call Vice Chair, all right? No, in all seriousness, no, my door is always open. And I do want to thank Vice Chair Jacques, who stepped in as a freshman legislator and handled his role very, very well, including running a couple meetings on my behalf when I was gone. Bernie, great work. We really appreciate everything you did to make this committee hum. And also my ranking member, the best ranking member in the Florida House, Representative Woodson, just grateful for your friendship and everything we get to do together. So with that, our subcommittee agenda having been concluded and seeing no further business before the committee, Vice Chair Jacques moves we rise. Without objection, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone.